Welcome, listeners. Thank you for tuning in to the Power of Voices podcast, presented to you by the Dutch Ministry of Foreign Affairs and hosted by Jeroen Kelderhuis, head of the Civil Society and Education Division. This podcast series is linked to the policy framework for strengthening civil society and will focus specifically on the core elements that are at the basis of this framework. Today, we will be talking about the support diplomats and international NGOs can offer activists, and we will delve into best practices, do's and don'ts, and of course the rich experiences of our guests.
Hello everyone, welcome to the third episode of the Power of Voices podcast. We have three fantastic guests with us today, Danielle Hirsch, To Chulker and Mr. Jean-Paul. Thank you so much for joining us today. Danielle Hirsch is the director of the organization Both Ends, which is lead partner of the Dutch-funded strategic partnership Fair, Green and Global Alliance. Danielle, could you briefly introduce yourself and explain how your organization helps activists worldwide?
Thank you, and thank you for having me. I really enjoy making podcasts, so let's go for it. I'm the director of a Dutch environmental and human rights organization, Both Ends, which was created about 30 years ago to support organizations in the Global South that work on sustainable development, which then, in those times, was a new topic. So we've also always worked with people that looked at environmental issues from the perspective of development and livelihoods, but also of basic human rights. And the Fair, Green and Global Alliance, which now I think goes into its 12th year or something, is an alliance of 8 organizations who all work on systemic change, we call it. So there's organizations that work on labor rights related to the textiles industry and women's rights. There's organizations that work on land rights related to large-scale agriculture business, to the environmental issues, etc. So for us, human rights have always been the core of change, because without human rights and without those that defend their human rights, we don't believe we will ever achieve system change, because you need some level of security about what the basics are of what we all want to achieve.
Yeah, great. And you're doing great work with your organization, I know. Who also knows that is To Chulker. I'm very happy to have you here. You are currently the ambassador of the Netherlands in Benin, and also have been previously posted in Mali, Bolivia, Rwanda, amongst other countries. A very welcome to you, To. Could you introduce yourself briefly and highlight how you connect with the topic of today, given your broad experience?
Yes, thank you so much, and thank you for having me here. Good afternoon. I'm To Chulker, ambassador for the Netherlands in Benin, Cameroon, Gabon, and Equatorial Guinea. And the support I can offer as an ambassador to activists, LGBTQI or climate activists, is different from country to country. First, the civic space differs between those countries. And secondly, my presence differs. I'm based in Benin, where I can act directly and recurrently. In Benin, we have a strong aid program aiming at sexual and reproductive health and rights, food security, and youth and women rights. And that gives me a huge network of activists from civil society. And it's very different in Cameroon, where I come twice a year. But there we have strong partnerships acting as COC, FGG, or Milieu Defensie. I've met there the partners and their partners, and they are a very important source of information. And in any case, I work on human rights always with the colleagues of the European Union. We share information, we share analysis, and we share concerns.
Great. Well, Mr. Jean-Paul, you are actually based in Cameroon. Great to have you here at the podcast. You are involved with the Dutch-funded strategic partnership Power of Pride. Could you give a brief introduction of yourself and the work you are doing in Cameroon?
Thank you very much. I'm Jean-Paul Enama. I'm the Executive Director of Humanity First Cameroon, which is an organization working closely with COC Netherlands. I define myself as a human rights defender for the rights of LGBTI people in Cameroon. And I'm also a specialist in public health issue for HIV epidemic, also for key populations. So Human First Cameroon is a community-based organization which exists since 11th year in Cameroon. It's it's illegal to be homosexual, so you cannot work directly with those population. We are working, we are using the health-based approach to work to deliver HIV services to our population. So besides, we are also promoting and protecting the rights of LGBTI people by doing observation and reporting of human rights violations. We write every year an annual report on these violations. A lot of advocacy where we engage with a lot of diplomatic representatives as part of UPR, for example, of SDG. So that is the broad work of what we are doing in Cameroon.
Thank you, and great to hear about your work. I'm very glad we collectively have many angles to investigate today's topic from. The main question of today is, how can diplomats and international NGOs assist activists like you, Mr. Jean-Paul? The foreign ministry supports a diverse civil society and opposes the shrinking of civic space across the world. And we try to ensure that activists can do their work and be vocal both locally and internationally. But Mr. Jean-Paul, to what extent do you feel that diplomats could assist you to constructively support your case?
The UPR, which is a good UN mechanism where we can advocate to advance the rights of LGBTI people in Cameroon. And diplomatic play a key role in this mechanism, because when it comes to your country to be a review at the UPR, we advocate to other government and formulate recommendations in order to either decriminalize same-sex relations law for same-sex laws or all other discriminatory law which exists. So we rely on them to do this work, and fortunately, for the three cycle we have been conducting, we have a good outcome. We have the French embassy, who is very supportive, Belgium, and also who are very supportive. They have small grant. They give organizations small grant to conduct field activity, basic activity. And we have also informal support. It's a kind of when someone is arrested, for instance, we can call them. And when someone is arbitrarily arrested, we can call them. And they play, because they have a lot of power, they can call the police station commissioner to release the person. So we have this type of example we have. The collaboration we have with the diplomatic representative.
Thank you very much. Very concrete examples. And of course, we all try to work from internationally agreed human rights and then combine our networks of the diplomats, networks of international NGOs, networks of activists worldwide. So there we find each other. And it's not only about financial support for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. It's also very much about opening up our networks. And as diplomats, as you say, we have sometimes access to doors that remain closed for activists or NGOs. So Danielle, you were listening to Mr. Jean-Paul as well. You are part of another strategic partnership, the Fair, Green and Global Alliance. How do you see both activists, international NGOs and diplomats come together in this partnership?
Yeah, so it's very interesting to recognize a lot about what Jean-Paul says. So we have worked very well with a range of embassies, and also you have the ambassadors and you have the human rights specialists in embassies for information, for sharing our concerns, so to prevent human rights violations. But also some ambassadors have represented the Netherlands in key cases where activists were either being judged or etc. by showing up, basically, by being physically there without saying anything. Sometimes it's very important as a signal of your solidarity as a country with certain activists, also in the environmental field. So that's one part of the story, let's put it that way. The other part, of course, is that the Netherlands is a trading nation. We have a lot of companies that are Dutch that do business with regimes and in countries where human rights are not taken as seriously as we would like them to be taken. And there, the embassies have different roles. So one of the roles is to make sure that when such a Dutch company comes by and is interested in doing a large-scale infrastructure project or developing fossil fuel resources or whatever, to make sure that there is a strong focus on analyzing if human rights violations could be happening in the context of those initiatives, and if so, to make a plan to prevent that from happening. So one of the key roles of the embassies for us, especially related to economic diplomacy, is that we start having way more focus on preventing human rights violations. And the second one, and that's the most difficult case, and that's when, as an NGO sitting in the Netherlands, we sometimes are in a dilemma, that once a project is happening with the involvement of Dutch actors, that can be a company, it can be a bank, whatever, we feel that human rights violations are happening, the local activists actually already lost faith in that the Dutch embassy as well. So in those cases, there is some, like, behind the scenes we can still connect. But at that moment, there's rather a role for the European representatives or whatever.
Yeah. So you have multilateral diplomacy, as we call it, at the UN, yes, at international organizations. Yes. We have bilateral diplomacy, where ambassadors in certain countries try to represent Dutch interests. The interests of the Netherlands, of course, have different angles. Sometimes it's human rights, sometimes it's the business community, and of course it's also the role of our diplomats worldwide, our ambassadors, to combine those interests as much as possible. And we all do this from what is in our constitution, promoting international rule of law. But in practice, of course, that might sometimes raise tensions. Maybe also the views of activists can sometimes be that a diplomat has indeed these different roles and different angles of work, and might lose maybe a bit trust in the work of
diplomats. It could be. Oftentimes it's the other way around, so that diplomats can be play both roles, especially when we're still in the phase of preventing things to happen. But there's also another role for, and maybe I should mention that because I didn't do that in the first question. But so why does FGG work so much on systems change? And we ask for strong rules and regulations, amongst others, in the area of corporate social responsibility. Because if we would have stronger rules that would be like legally binding, it would be much easier for an international NGO to work in a country like the Netherlands to make sure that our companies do not pass certain thresholds of rights. When I say systems change, it's meant to avoid that we have to work on a case-by-case basis.
To, do you recognize these examples from your own practice in the countries you're working or have worked before?
Yes, I do. Because we had an example that a group of gay men were very badly attacked. The house was burned, etc., in Mali. And at that moment, as embassy, we helped them to get a shelter in a neighborhood country and to get a coaching of COC Netherlands to really know how to protect themselves, how to be more strategic, how to organize them so that you are not taken aback by the aggression and the violence of your neighborhood. But really, I know that some embassies do give already deliver also to political activists on democratic rights. They deliver already a visa so that the people can hide or be safe for a while.
Yeah. Now, within our strategic partnerships, we are, of course, sometimes working on very sensitive issues in certain contexts. And of course, the objective is to promote human rights and to help activists within their context, within their locations. But sometimes this work can be very can become very tense for a certain certain time. And of course, also the ministry tries to see how we can help in such a case, often together with other countries who are also represented in such a country.
And maybe can I give some other examples of how I think one of when I was thinking preparing this podcast, one of the main things I do is amplify the voices of those who are not heard, and especially of youth. In, you know, we live in patriarchal societies, but also there's a lot of inequality between elders and young people. And last week I was at a youth camp in Parakou on SOHR, and there the youth organized a lobby lunch with the local authorities, the mayors, the prefect, the policemen, the religious leaders. And by my simple presence, I strengthening the convening power of the youth movement.
Daniela is nodding as she recognizes some of these things.
In our line of work, which again is different than is more related to the conflict over resources, which is a huge power conflict also between Western countries and countries in the global south. It's an issue of indigenous peoples. It's an issue of women. And these are typically groups that do not have a lot of access to also some of the embassies that we're talking about. So what we find is that given that the conflict is getting bigger, it's not getting smaller because everybody, there's Russian resources. So we have to start building, and I'm sitting here as an international NGO. I get that. I mean, I feel I'm a Dutch NGO, but maybe I should get over it. As an international NGO, we increasingly feel the responsibility to actively invest in preventive and support structures in the region that are controlled by the activists themselves that are potentially at risk. And those will be including a network of embassies or European, so because it is the objective of the European Union to safeguard human rights, but it will also have to include independent people that can make analysis of human rights risks, that can buy stuff to prevent human rights violations from happening, like security cameras or whatever. There is a whole lot of things that we can do in order to prevent the worst from happening. And that should be more in the hands of the activists themselves. So it's part of our responsibility to make sure that that risk is as small as possible. So as an organization, we've decided to make this a big issue for the coming years and to start building up local infrastructure that allows people to get control over their own, you know, safety.
Mr. Jean-Paul, are there also examples how diplomats giving their access to governmental circles in certain countries can help with changing laws or regulations?
Yes, yes, we have a concrete example, as I mentioned, the UPR, the Universal Periodic Review, where a country, other government has made recommendations to Cameroon. I can recall the second cycle where Belgium, where the country who made a recommendation to cease all arbitrary arrests on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity, and cease that. That time we have noticed a change. There is no law in Cameroon, but we have been. They have told us that there is an informal prescription of our president who have told the military or police to stop arrest people on the basis of their sexual orientation. So that is a concrete example.
Yeah. To, can you give examples when we talk about activism and supporting activism, how this would work in practice, how we can better, as diplomats, as international community, listen to the needs of local activists?
Yeah, of course. I think especially in Benin, where we are able to support in long-term movements, NGOs, local initiatives on SOHR, with a strong lobby and advocacy component, there you really can help movement building. You can really, by financing, and I mean, There's really, I spoke already about that youth camp last week, where more than 300 young people working on SRHR activists were together. But this is recurrent, and every time they come together and their capacities of lobby and advocacy are strengthened, their voices are heard. And I think that long term is very important for our support. Another one thing is what, there are two things I want to say. One is, for example, on the gender, women's rights and gender equality, the embassy has been, for example, the lead of the donor community on this topic, and that gave us a lot of access to ministers, to meetings, to dinners, to the media, every time on women's rights, on gender equality, on masculinity, on power relations. So that helped, really, that was a very interesting position, because as a gender, as lead of donor, you're speaking not from the Netherlands, but from all the different NGOs and international organizations. And you can really make a plea publicly on gender equality. And I was very happy that Dejis gave me that mandate, because it is also my own conviction and my own activist fiber on women's rights. But another example I would like to say, that is that issue on Western agenda. And, you know, here in Benin, for example, there has been a very, very careful process to address sexuality at schools, at secondary schools, and to address sexual harassment by teachers and by professors. And that has been a long process of engaging with religious leaders, with teachers, with the Ministry of Education, Health, Social Affairs, to really have a comprehensive sexual education program. And also to find where do we all agree. And maybe it's not the Dutch way of saying she decides, but at least it is we support young people, young women, not to get pregnant and to finish their school. That was the common agreement. And so that is a very nice process. It started in, I think, 2012, the first negotiation with the religious leaders and the schools. And actually, it's implemented all over. But what do you see now? That it is actually very sexy. So a lot of NGOs and a lot of international organizations want to come in and join in, and go sometimes much further, or without taking into account the agreements that were already there. And I think, for me, Benin is very open, but you have to respect the local processes that are going on. As you can't come in as an international NGO or an international organization, okay, I'll take this, I'll do this. No, you have to see what is already happening, and what are the agreements that have been done, and how schools work together with health centers to provide the services to the young people to get the SRHR services. So yeah, there is that Western agenda that sometimes we are pushing for results, and sometimes we just should go with all the efforts that have been done already for a long time.
Thank you very much, Tho. Diplomacy is changing. International solidarity is changing. We want to listen more to the voices in the Global South and really help people helping themselves, so to say. The former program where we had strategic partnerships between diplomats and international and local NGOs was called Dialogue and Dissent. And many people in the Netherlands and worldwide even are surprised that the Dutch government is supporting also dissent. That might sometimes raise tension. But Daniela, do you think providing a space for having dialogue and dissent promoted by diplomats in our embassy, is that enough?
You're asking for dialogue, but I'm going to emphasize dissent. Was very interesting. I think maybe not many people would have expected that would have that also meant dissent with certain Dutch policies. And I think that's where the key is for this conversation as well. I think we have to realize that the embassies represent Dutch policies in all its variety and diversity. So there's trade policies, there is development cooperation policies, etc. It should be a concern for everybody representing the Dutch government to make sure that what the Dutch do in whatever country we're in prevent human rights violations from happening. And that, I think there's some work to be done there yet.
Though you have given some great examples, can you also give an example how the new generation actually is being helped by Dutch diplomacy?
Yeah, I think one of the main things that youth of Benin is very, for them it's very important to be part of a global world. They are connected through all the social media and they really want to be part of the regional networks, the regional movements, the global discussions. And for me, an NGO and also national NGOs, they are part of the global networks and can facilitate these interconnections between youth movement around global issues as SUHR or climate change, to really share strategies, sharing dreams and visions. And that is so important for activists when you really want to change the world and you feel sometimes very lonely.
Jean-Paul, how do you see the Dutch? Are we punching above our weight? Are we doing enough as the Netherlands?
To be honest, compared to other embassies, even if I don't want to make a comparison, but I can say that Netherlands is very on the forefront, in very more, can I say it? They react very... Yes, they are very close to the community compared to other embassy. In Cameroon, for example, is the only donors we have who cover a lot of organizations, who support a lot of organizations since 6 years. That is it's very important to point it out. So we think that we are covering a lot of large advocacy, first response, shelters, a lot of things who have been done through this fund. So we are very, it's also a privilege and opportunity also for me to thank you for what you have been doing.
Thank you. At the end of September, the Dutch Parliament will discuss the new policy paper of Minister Lieshe Schreinemacher. The title of the policy paper is Doing What the Netherlands is Good At. How do you see that that title? How do you interpret the title?
Well, we're an international operating NGO, so we see a lot of different donors. And I think what the Netherlands hasn't been afraid to do, let's put it that way, the Dutch government, is to put its stick its neck out. So the whole dialogue and dissent idea, shifting the power, having these conversations like we're having it now, pretty openly, I must say, is for me... it's not normal. It's not happening with all donors. It's not happening with a lot of civil servants. So in that sense, the Dutch are definitely doing something special. And that's, of course, the dialogue is needed because we are all aware that we can improve things, which we have to do. And that's a bit where, of course, our role is on what can we do better.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for being part of this podcast. Mr. Jean-Paul, last words to you. What advice would you have to our new minister?
What advice I have for our new minister is that continue to support us, because this type of funds very help local activists. So continue to support us. And also advice I can have to other organizations use the support we receive from the embassy, but know that we are the We have to empower ourselves in order to hold our government accountable. We are the one who have to make the job, but we rely on the support of the embassy. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Today in our third podcast, we were discussing how diplomats, international NGOs and activists in the Global South can strengthen and help each other's work. But let's not forget that those international activists are on the front line to do what is in the interest of all of us, promoting international human rights in their broader sense. Thank you so much.